Greetings that I had to give them this morning from people that we have known. Their kids came to A&M when I was down there. They were from California. They're from that congregation. So it's just the way that it works. We're in the middle of meeting season, and so lots of my meetings fell in the fall this year. So for right now in October, you're not going to see me. We have to head out tonight as soon as services are over to do a wedding. And I wasn't planning on these weddings. They just popped up, and so you had to work them in, but it's part of what I do. And one time I was in a congregation and somebody was not really happy that I was gone. And I asked him, I said, well, where do you think we get people for gospel meetings from? I said, there's congregations have to give them up and they have to come. And because we want them to come. So it's a two-way street, and you have to just, you know, give a little. And we have to, not that anybody's complained here. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying that I've encountered it before, and so maybe heading off the encountering is that just remember that when we have gospel meetings, people come from somewhere. I was thinking about what you were saying, Chris, about the Lord's Supper in the second century. What's interesting is that you have leftovers from the first century. And you can't rest on those men's writings because they're not inspired, but they didn't come up with stuff either yet. There were going to be variations. One of the things you read in the very early second century, and I'm talking about in like 110, 120, is you read a lot of the first day of the week taking the Lord's Supper. And there's several references. Why? I mean, why do you read that so early? It's because they were practicing it in the first century. And it stands to reason because of what we read and what Chris mentioned. We try to follow the pattern of the Bible. That's what the point that Chris was making, and we need to be always very careful about that. All right, the passage in Colossians, the fourth chapter, our lesson this morning, the value of brethren. I would never have thought about preaching on this section. Greenwood had a summer series that they did on the book of Colossians, and you know I was gone a couple of weeks ago, and this was my assignment. I was to preach this section. When I first thought about it and I was reading it, I thought, what do I do with this? But the more that you do your research, the more that you dig into a passage, more things come out to you, and of course we'll talk about that in a minute, a couple of things overall come out. We're going to talk about individual people. We're going to look at folks that names are weird to us. We might hear some meaning in them. Some names are still around, like Mark. But we're going to see people that we need to remember are just people. They were folks just like us in a different culture long ago, but they followed Jesus Christ, and that's our commonality. They saw in him that he is the resurrected Lord, therefore King of all, and that we should give our life to him. And I'm glad that I was assigned this section. Had I not been assigned it, I don't think in my preaching life I would have ever preached on it. Sort of like what Ross was asking about hearing a lesson on Lamentations. That's just not a section of Scripture you generally want to run to and preach. And yet, sometimes I think we do a disservice if we don't try to preach through books of the Bible because sometimes we fail to cover that. Okay, the passage has been read to you. There are two things that I want you to notice. First of all, he's going to talk about the character of people. He's going to describe them, for instance, as beloved brother or fellow slave or servant or other terms, faithful minister. So we're going to do that first. I want to look at these people, at the terms that Paul uses to describe them. Then I want us to, of course, think about the application to us. Are we those kind of people? Is that our character? Is that how God could identify us? Then the second thing that grows out of that is, of course, what they did. There were activities because they were this, because as Paul describes them as being this, then he says they were doing certain things or they had done certain things. And so I want to, in the second half of the lesson, look at that and think about that. So let's begin. We're just going to kind of have a graph that we go through. You have it if you've picked up the sheets to fill in. All right, Tychicus in verse 7. He's described by several terms. The first one, he is described as a beloved brother. That's just not a term we use very often. I don't go up to people. Now, every now and then I hear it in prayers. Every once in a while you hear somebody say that he is beloved. But we don't generally go up to somebody and say that. But it's quite common. In fact, in this chapter, you see it more than once. it's quite common in the scripture to see somebody referred to that way. The Greek word has the word agape in it. You see it there, agapetos, in the third column. It is a word that's the highest form of love, all right? So that's the love that Christ had for us. This love does what is in the best interest of another person, regardless of whether they get anything out of it or not, whether there's anything that comes back. Phileo love, friendship love, is a give and take. You're giving to somebody because they're giving back to you. But agape is a wholly one-sided thing. And so when he talks about a beloved brother, he is saying in essence the same thing that God said of his own son. This is my beloved son. Those passages we won't take time to read in Matthew are just three examples. So let me ask you something. You know any difficult brothers? Do you know any difficult people? See, every congregation, sooner or later, has something like this, right? I've never been in a place where there was harmony, and I'm not saying bad or anything like that necessarily. I'm just saying there can always be folks that are more difficult to get along with. And you say, yeah, we're looking at him. So more difficult to be with and to deal with. Try this the next time that you have a difficult person. Go up to them and say, you know, you are my beloved brother. It's kind of hard to not like that guy or lady if you say that to them. If you have in your mind that Christ died for them just like he died for me, then that begins to change something in the way at least that we look at it. He calls him faithful minister. That term faithful is the Greek word pistos. And it means basically true, loyal, or trustworthy. Sometimes we use it. We say to somebody, well, are they faithful? What do we mean by that? We mean, well, are they a Christian? Are they following God? And that's true, but it's to the application. That is, the word faithful means you're true, you're loyal, you're trustworthy. So if I mean it toward a Christian, then I'm thinking in terms of, is that Christian doing what Christ asked them to do? Are they obeying what Christ did? But notice there are passages sometimes in the New Testament that will talk about faithful stewards, all right? So it doesn't have anything to do with whether they're a Christian or not. It means in his activities as a steward of somebody else's affairs, is he true, trustworthy? Can you depend on him? So we need to always remember that first of all. That's the idea. The other word there is our word deacon. You see it, diakonos. We just brought it over into English as deacon. I don't know how many times I've done lessons through my life of preaching on deacons, but it's been more than once. Because every now and then you want to appoint more deacons, and guess what? The elders come. They just said, will you preach a lesson on deacons, or you preach a series of lessons on elders, because we're thinking about appointing more men. In all my time, folks, of researching this word, I decided to do a little more work on it this time. I've never seen this. Have you seen this before? Has anybody seen that the root word for deacon means kick up the dust? You've seen it before? Well, I got to talk to you after, because I want to know where you've seen that before. Because I don't know why I've never seen that before. Do you know what that means? We all get it, don't we? It means that when somebody says to you, when somebody gives you a job, when you're assigned on it, sometimes you say it to your kids, don't you? I can hear myself saying to Jonathan, get a move on it. You know, hurry up. We got to get this done. All right, so you see that kind of thing. If somebody assigns you a job, could they say of you, you kick up the dust? You get it done. I mean, every deacon in this assembly has to begin to think about that. If the elders assign you a job, is that how you approach it? Is that what you do and records it? This has nothing to do with deacon. It means servant, all right? So it's used of men who do not meet the qualification of a deacon necessarily. It's everybody. All of us are servants. We're all ministers, and so Tychicus is described in that way. And then lastly, he's described as a fellow servant. But servant is just not strong enough word. You know, that makes you think of Downton Abbey. Okay, so while those guys are bound to that house, are they bound to it permanently? No. In that show, you see some come and go, don't you? You see they hire people, they fire people. That happens in that show if you followed it. So it doesn't have anything to do, what a weak word that is for any of the translations to choose. If you look in your footnote, nearly always, the English Standard, I believe, has it that way too, it says slave, because that's what it is. You are a slave. That word doulos. And then soon is like the word in synagogue. Synagogue means coming together. Soon means together. Right? That's S-Y-N or S-U-N. So that's a fellow. That's a sharing in. And so what he describes Tychicus as is, he is a slave that belongs to the same master that I do. So here's the question. Do you think of yourself as a slave? Do we think of ourselves as slaves? Because here's the point. A slave has no rights of their own. We have no rights of our own. If you're a slave to someone, you are bound to them. You can't say, okay, I'm done with this Downton Abbey business. I'm going somewhere else. A slave is bound to the master. He has no rights. His rights are to do what the master wants, what the master bids. And so if we would stop and think about ourselves that way in relationship to Jesus Christ and each other, we have no rights of our own. And then he describes Onesimus, who happens to be a real slave that is physically in the Roman world. Do you remember the book of Philemon? Onesimus was a slave. In fact, if we were to go back and read that, Paul mentions that he converted him during that time, that Onesimus had left his master, Philemon. And so what Paul says in that book is, I'm sending him back to you because while he has been very useful to me, and I need him, because Paul's in prison, by the way, when he's writing both of these books. We're going to see that in a second. But when he's writing Philemon and Colossians, he's in prison, Roman prison. So he says of Onesimus, he's useful to me, but I didn't have the right to use him. Why? Because he's your slave. Therefore, I'm sending him back to you. I want you to stop and think about that. I am so thankful we don't live in a culture that has slavery. But here's the thing we have to think about. There are places in this world that still do. If I were a Christian in that culture, what would I have to do if I was a slave? The Bible's pretty clear, isn't it? The master does not have to free the slave, and the slave has to do what he has to do, he or she, toward the master. Do, he says, be a faithful slave. And there's too many passages, Timothy, Titus. I mean, we live in America, and because of the Civil War, slavery is anathema to us. I'm glad of that. I'm glad it's anathema. I'm glad that we don't have it. But here's the deal. If you were in a culture that had slavery, Paul said, go back to him. That's the will of God. God could care less about our economics. He could care less whether you live in a democracy or a dictatorship. I get so amused at me and so many other people who, when we are following politics every 4 years and we just think, well, this is going to be the heyday, we're going to change it, it's all going to be better. I'm really proud of a lot of young people who've seen the foolishness of that. And they just have given up on it. Because we don't need to. What if you lived in a dictatorship? What if I was in communist China right now? Talked with a preacher out where I was this past week, and he said, we can't even contact our brothers in China anymore because they're watching the emails. They have cracked down. Again, they're going back to Mao Zedong. They're going that direction. He said, if we contact them, we put them in jeopardy that they will be imprisoned or worse. What if I lived in that culture? You still have to obey the government? You still have to pray for those who are in leadership? You still have to do what God said to do? You see, folks, he doesn't care if we're in a democracy or a monarchy or a dictatorship. He cares that we do what he said to do. So if you were a slave, he said, go back, serve him. Here's the application to us. Would we give up our rights to serve Christ? I wish a lot of people during COVID would have thought of that. I wish a lot of people who claim to be followers of Jesus Christ would have contemplated what it means during politics and political seasons to think about that. We have no rights if we would think about it. Our master is Jesus. And all he says do, we must do. Bring ourselves under whatever we must bring ourselves under, because that's what God wants. And that's something we have to think about when we think about these people of New Testament times. All right, Aristarchus, verse 10. He describes him as a fellow prisoner. In fact, Paul says, remember my chains at the very end of the chapter. If you back up to verse 3, we didn't read it. At the same time, pray also for us that God may open to us a door for the word to declare the mystery of Christ, on account of which, he says, because of that, I am in prison. Man, that's something to think about. This Aristarchus guy is with him. He's a fellow prisoner too. How far would you go with a brother? Any of y'all ever had a family member in prison? I'm going to keep raising my hand, because Wilna and I have. When you go through those bars, you have to get rid of everything in your pockets. You have to bring nothing in with you. They're telling you what to do, where you can walk, when you can go through. And then you sit down and they bring the person you love to the opposite side in a glass window, and you're having to talk to them by phone. Do you know what it feels like when you're walking through those prison doors? The guards are looking at you saying, well, these are the scum of the earth. What are you? You look like scum to us too. Because that's what you feel like. Anybody behind prison, you know how they all said, you know, everybody's innocent behind prison doors. And the reason they're there is they're not all innocent. It was a hard time for us, a really hard time. You can imagine. Just think about any loved one in here finding themselves in a situation where I believe in our case it was falsely accused. But they end up having to serve time. They could have ended up serving a lot more. Okay, that's the application is this. What if it was for the cause of Christ that I am a prisoner? That they have me behind bars because I preach. And they have Ross behind bars. And we're fellow prisoners because we preach. Would you come visit us? Would you come see us? You see how you'd feel? You know what it'd be like? I'm going to tell you, it's something we have to think about because the time may well come. And then you think about Mark and Justus. He describes them as fellow workers. They're also the only Jews that are with him. He says of the circumcision. The term worker here is blue-collar worker. Isn't it white-collar labor? I'm not saying white-collar labor is not work. But you understand what I mean. Blue means one who labors with another in the cause of Christ. It means that you work up a sweat. You ever broken a sweat? Come back to Philippians 2. I want to show you another guy, Epaphroditus. In Philippians 2 at verse 25, the text says about him, I thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker, uses that same term, fellow soldier and your messenger and minister to my need. For he has been longing for all of you, have been distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy, and honor such men, for he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me. I wonder sometimes, would I do that? Would I literally put my life in danger to fulfill? He was bringing the money from the Philippians to Paul, who needed it. And he said because he did, he put himself physically in such stress that he got so sick that he almost died. And God had mercy on us. People know I'm a beekeeper, and you talk about worker bees. That's exactly what they are, the workers. You know how long a worker bee lives in the summer? From birth to death. Because as soon as they're born and they come out of that cocoon and chew their way out, they begin working as soon as they dry out. They have the job of cleaning at first, and they clean out cells and get it ready for her to lay more eggs. And then they start feeding the larva and the other, and they're bringing on more. And then it just goes through, and then finally there are guards at the entrance. And then finally the last stage, they're flying out, getting the pollen and the nectar. In the summer, they live 3 weeks from birth to death. They literally work themselves to death. I wonder if God's trying to put stuff in nature to say, you better work while it's day. When the night is coming. Do we work like that? And then he talks about Luke and Demas, and he describes Luke as his beloved physician. And here's a contrast you don't find in this book, but these two men, Demas, he's mentioned here. Do you remember him? It's like, yeah, I know Demas. Demas is that guy that left Paul, not in Colossians. Luke in 2 Timothy 4, and there are two verses, same way here, or one verse here, two verses there. Only Luke is with me. I want you to get in your mind where Paul is when Paul writes that. He writes this last book, and he says, only Luke is with me. He is in the Mamertine prison from which he will not come out alive. If you've ever been to Rome and been to that place there where they think it is, there is basically a grate in the pavement now that you would look down in. There's nice stairs to go down and see it. Now, there weren't stairs in that day. They let Paul down through that hole. They fed him. That's only his only oxygen, his only light. I never had thought about this. Only Luke is with me. Makes you wonder, was Luke down there with him when he wrote those words? Seems to be. But here's the opposite. Demas, having loved this present world, has deserted me. You know, it's true of every last one of you that I'm looking at and you're looking back at me. We're going to be one or the other. We're going to desert Christ, or we're going to be with him through thick and thin. So what's going to happen to you and me before we die? What kind of character is God going to say of us? Are you the beloved physician or are you Demas? Do you know how many people we could think about right now? You could tell me they're no longer here. I don't know, but you know. I'm coming to know. There are people even now who are leaving. And you see it. I've seen it too many times. And it's going to be true of you or me, one or the other. All right, the actions that these men take. Let's think about that as the second half of the lesson very quickly. Tychicus. Verse 8 is described, or rather translated in two ways. The New King James translates it this way, that I've sent him to you that he may know your circumstances. If you'll read the English Standard, it's going to say the opposite of that. So that has to do with a variant, all right, the way the Greeks. Sometimes just the spelling of a word could translate it differently in English, so a copyist can make a mistake. So either way, it's going to make sense to us. This doesn't materially change the text. It's either he's bringing news of me to you, or I want to know about you and bring it back to me. We're a body. We're members of one another. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Let me ask you, are you like Tychicus? Do you even care about others in this body, or are you just a solo? See, God doesn't want us to fly through life solo. Everywhere you read, there's that the church at Colossae, the church at Philippi, these people were bound to one another. They lived in that place. They worked together. They knew one another, and they were to care for one another. I'll never forget one time in a congregation, a guy was visiting with us, and we knew him from other places. He was a good man. He had served as an elder in the local church. But I'll never forget walking up to him, and I said, I'm so glad that you're working and worshiping with us. And he said, worshiping. I mean, he held his finger up. He said, worshiping. I thought to myself, you don't know anything. You mean that all you're going to do is just come and sit in the pew and then leave? And for 5 years, that's exactly what happened. I don't know how he was an elder at another church. Because that doesn't make you a part of a body. Just coming and sitting in a pew and worshiping doesn't make you a fellow worker. Doesn't make you a fellow soldier. Doesn't make you a fellow prisoner. When you think how bound you would be to one another. Tychicus is somebody, I can send him to you. And he may know your circumstances, or the English Standard says that you may know how we are. Again, to go on with the Corinthian passage, that there be no divisions in the body. The members have the same care for one another. Always amazing about church splits that nobody ever reads 1 Corinthians 12:21. Nobody that leaves, everybody that leaves always has the right reason for leaving, right? Always right if we leave. Those scoundrels that are left. Always wonder what's going to happen in heaven. Do you think that's kind of funny? It's not. But it ought to jark us. Is that you get to heaven and you whisper to your wife, how did they get up here? We left them down there. You know, if people would stop and think about that for just a second, there would be an end to the leaving. It's what always amazes me about the book of Revelation. Pretty messed up churches. I mean, one of them, he says, you have a few that walk with me in white. Meaning what? Most of them are out. On the outs with God. You have a few. There's a few that walk with you in white. Or he upbraids this church. He says, if you don't, I'm going to come. And he says it a lot. I'm going to come and remove your candlestick. You're just barely there. You're barely hanging on. Even Ephesus. Remember your first love. I mean, there's almost no church. There's only about, I think, one where it's all praise. So here's the point. You get upset. You get torn up. You think, I said, I'm leaving. I've had enough. That's it. It's like a body, you think, of a hand saying, okay, I'm through with the rest of you. And like in the Addams Family, it just severs itself and off it goes. How ridiculous would that look? How ridiculous would it be for a physical body? And so we need to think about that when we read these passages. And that he may encourage your hearts, that term is parakaleo, and it means to call alongside of, close and personal. So do we need courage to go on? I always think about Paul in Acts 28. It says, when the brethren came as far as the three ends and the Appii Forum, when they came that far, it says Paul saw them and took courage. That tells me Paul needed it. That means Paul was low. That means Paul had suffered the shipwreck, all that had happened when they were driven for those 2 weeks, and being a prisoner on top of that, and the stress and the strain on him physically and mentally and emotionally. And when he saw him, he thanked God and took courage. We need to come in that door every time and look at our brothers and sisters and thank God and took courage. Right of Aristarchus and Mark, he says, Aristarchus, greet you. Mark, welcome him. That word means to enfold in the arms. We say embrace. We acknowledge their worth, is basically. We're saying that you're worth everything because God died for you. I think about Paul when he knelt down on that beach with all of those elders, the church at Ephesus. There was much weeping on the part of all. They embraced Paul and kissed him. You think of how tender that situation is. Again, do we express our love and appreciation for the brothers and sisters that are here? And then it's in what is called the Greek middle voice, and you don't have to know all of this stuff, but sometimes it helps you. At least it helps me to understand that it means a high level of self-involvement. When it's in that middle voice, it means it's personal. It means you're doing it too. And it reveals what we really think about our brothers and sisters. So every day, and I think it's one of the neat things about texting. It's not the only way, but it's a neat way. You need to think every day about somebody you can text in this church and uplift them, encourage them. You get that from Calvin a lot, and you get it from others in this church. How did you pronounce that? Epaphras? That's the right way to pronounce that. I always say Epaphras, but it's Epaphras. Always struggling on your behalf in prayer. Man, isn't that neat? That word is agonizomai. You hear an English word? He's in agony for you to contend for, like an athlete does, or in war. You ran a half marathon yesterday. You agonizomai'd. Yeah, you ran it. Strenuous zeal. Take the church directory and pray for members here like that. Somebody says sometimes, I can't pray for 30 minutes. Well, get the directory out and just start praying about everybody you come to on that directory. I guarantee you can pray for long over 30 minutes. And then it says he's worked hard for you. Pontus means labor, toil, but it has this other meaning, pain and anguish. Remember, we've already said something about that. One thing matters, it's victory. That's what we're striving for. And then the last guy, Archippus. He says, I don't know if he's upbraiding him or just encouraging him. I don't know which it is. But it's one of them. He says, see, you tell Archippus, see that you fulfill your ministry. See there means to perceive and discern. And it means that you look at something and you see what needs to be done and you go do it. And so what he is telling Archippus is, you get with it. You do what needs to be done. I'm too busy, somebody says. Someone else will do it. It'll be tough. We're going to have opposition. There are lots and lots of people sit back. Are you a sitting back person? Are you just coming to worship here? Are you a worker? Can we describe you? Can the elders look at you and say, I know. We can give him that job. We can give her that job. It'll be done. It'll be done right. Ministry service, we've been given a task from the Lord like Archippus. Fulfill it, complete it, finish it, do it. I always think about that scene when Luke is trying to raise that ship he had flown in out of the water by the force, and he just, you know, and you see Yoda's eyes, he's all excited, it's coming, it's lifting, and then it just sinks, disappears under the water. I know there are people here that say, what is he talking about? But if you're a Star Wars guy, it's Yoda saying, when he says to him, I'll try, and Yoda upbraided him, he said, there is no try. Do or not do. There is no try. And that's the way it is in the kingdom. Do or not do. There is no try. What will Jesus say to Archippus on the day of judgment? If it's upbraiding him, what will he say to him? Because I guarantee it's tough words there at the end. You tell Archippus, see that you fulfill your ministry. Do what I gave you to do. If you just have an invitation this morning, I hope the lessons helped you think about what it means to be a servant of God. These people were real people, and they loved God like we love God. But he had some things to say to them, and they were both praise and good, and then challenge as well. And that's what we do. We try to help each other be better. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. If we can help you this morning to come to him, or if you need to repent, come and let people know while together we stand and sing.